In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Kempire is brought to you by
Washington, D.C., the Kempire After Dark, the Villain Era live tour is coming to your city on August 22nd. But before that, we're coming to Philly on July 10th at City Winery. Then we're going to Atlanta on August 5th. Then we're going to Washington, D.C., and this is going to be an all-new show, all-new hot topics, all-new reality TV conversation, and all kinds of amazing guests and surprises. Be sure to get your tickets today, and don't forget, we're coming back to New York City on September 12th. Go get your tickets. There's also a live stream option exclusively for the New York City show. More information will be available in the description.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
It's day 11 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and there's a battle between the prosecution and defense on whether or not to keep in the DNA evidence of surrounding Kid Cudi's car. Not only that, we're giving you an update with all the celebrity names that Capricorn Clark mentioned yesterday and some of the implications her testimony might have on this trial. And we have to unpack day 11 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. So let's get into this. Before we get to the day 11 events of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, there were a couple of things that I wanted to talk about from yesterday, and I'm making sure the audio is working for those that were here yesterday. And thank you all for the love and support and understanding of what it means creating this content on a daily basis, and tech things will happen. Because there were a couple of things that you don't even know about that I didn't mention in yesterday's video when I was trying to upload it. A part of it was black, and then I had to It was a lot, but I appreciate all of your understanding when it comes to covering this content, creating it, also researching it, editing it, and then bringing it to you. So thank you so much for all of your patience. But let's get into some of what happened yesterday with Capricorn Clark's testimony. Capricorn Clark talked about being there the night of Diddy going to Kid Cudi's home. There was this battle, though, yesterday that we didn't get to mention in regards to the prosecution not wanting DNA evidence included in this trial when it comes to, we mentioned this, that during the cross-examination of Kid Cudi, the defense mentioned that there was DNA of a female, and Kid Cudi said he knew nothing about that. So our friends over at It's On Site on Instagram say this. They said, Lance Jimenez, a firefighter and arson investigator, testified today on behalf of the prosecution. During his testimony, Jimenez described collecting evidence from a car fire at Kid Cudi's residence on January 9th of 2012. Among the items gathered were a bottle, a handkerchief, and a lighter. He also noted that Kid Cudi had provided him with a glass linked to a 2011 burglary at his Hollywood Hills home. Remember, Capricorn Clark talked about that. The glass had been given to a third party, and later analysis revealed two fingerprints on it. However, Jimenez recently learned that both fingerprint cards have since been destroyed. That's what they were reporting on in regards to today, in regards to what the investigator was saying. But there was something from yesterday that I wanted to highlight here in regards to this case. So according to Yahoo News, they said last week, defense attorneys for Sean Diddy Combs questioned government witness Kid Cudi about female DNA allegedly found on a bottle recovered from Cudi's burned Porsche sports car. The government objected to the line of questioning, though Cudi went on to speculate that Combs was responsible for the vehicle fire without citing any supporting evidence. The prosecution, led by the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, has so far centered on incidents of DV, drug use, and hotel room sex in an effort to prove RICO and S trafficking allegations. This week, the government announced plans to call Los Angeles Fire Department arson investigator Lance Jimenez, who's on the stand today, as an expert witness. On Tuesday morning, prosecutors asked the judge to prevent defense attorneys from questioning Jimenez about his own report, which confirms that female DNA was recovered by the Los Angeles Police Department. The judge overruled the government's objection, and for now it appears Investigator Jimenez will be allowed to testify as an expert. His testimony may include acknowledgement that the DNA recovered was consistent with a female individual, not Combs. And I already see the community saying, OMG, see, the government just wants to throw Diddy under the bus. And partly what you're saying, no, this should be noted. This should be given to the jury when it comes to, you need to have the full picture. However, Capricorn Clark and other assistants, Kaplan from last week, do we really believe that Diddy was doing all of his own dirty work? Do we not notice a pattern of, like, he knows what he's doing? I just want to point that out. Should it be included? I think it should be, because it's a part of giving us a full picture. I don't think that it's something that should not be included. Yes, it hurts the prosecution's case a little bit, but I think if we are able to think critically, is Diddy doing all of his own dirty work? Even though it seems based off of at least the night of these incidents, the home invasion, it did seem like he was doing his own dirty work on some level. So the judge overruled the government's objection, and for now it appears the investigator Jimenez will be allowed to testify as an expert. His testimony may include acknowledgement that the DNA recovered was consistent with a female individual, not Combs. Such testimony could significantly weaken the prosecution's theory and clarify why no charges were filed against Combs in connection to the fire and cast doubt on Cuddy's earlier speculation. Trial proceedings resume this morning. They remind us. So it could hurt their case, but hopefully the prosecution isn't just relying on the arson of Kid Cudi's Porsche as their only way of proving RICO. We shall see. But a lot of people that are, I don't know if people are necessarily defending Diddy, but they might be defending the fact is that this is not RICO. And I have to say this, if I'm going to think on the other side of things, because, you know, we try to do that here, we have to be careful here. Put Diddy aside. The government has to prove, without a shadow of a doubt, in my opinion, that this is RICO. We do not want a jury saying that this is RICO and they have not proven it, because this could eventually affect us. Yesterday, we reported that Todd Chrisley and Julie Chrisley were getting a pardon. And I said things like this will eventually affect us if they're not taken seriously. For me, I feel like, well, no, that is a valid concern. If the government is not able to really lay out for us that this is RICO and falls in line with RICO, and this is just not their attempt to just get Diddy, they could always cite this Diddy case if they were to win, cite this Diddy case. Well, we proved it here. So the everyday person could also be affected by this decision. Remember, last week in a separate video that we did, we had a defense attorney talking about the R. Kelly case and how a lot of people normally say if you're having a RICO case, it usually it's not centered around one person. But then he cited the precedents when it comes to the R. Kelly case. And I was like, oh. So that is something that attorneys are now looking at as well. We did it here. So what says that we can't do it here? So that's my only concern when it comes to, I'm not concerned about Diddy, because what is clear when it comes to the Diddy of it all is that he did abuse people. Maybe he did not do the S trafficking or the RICO accusations, but he did break the law. However, we're talking about this federal case. That's the tricky thing about here. I don't think everyone, there are some people that are defending Diddy and say free Diddy. But I think a lot of people are also saying we got to be careful here when it comes to what exactly is he being charged for? What exactly are the jurors supposed to do when it comes to their job as jurors in deciding guilty or not guilty? I just point that out. I'm not an attorney. We are going to bring an attorney on this week. Stay tuned for that. Again, this is another reason why you should be locked here, because we will, and also listening to the podcast, because that will probably drop first on the podcast. So subscribe to the Kempire Podcast today. Before we move on, today's Alive is brought to you by our friends over at Factor Meals. On a busy day like today, I had so many appointments today. Factor is going to make your life simple. You can get a dietitian-approved, chef-crafted meal that ranges from calorie smart to even keto, protein plus options for you in 2 minutes. This is what I love about Factor Meals, and we've partnered with them for quite some time. They are ready for you this summer because no one wants to be in the kitchen cooking anything. But of course, I've gotten you a discount. So get started at factormeals.com/Kempire50off and use code Kempire50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code Kempire50off at factormeals.com/Kempire50off for 50% off plus free shipping. That's factormeals.com/Kempire50off. More information on Factor Meals will be available in the description. So back to this. Let's get back into what is playing out from yesterday. And one of the reporters that I've been loving watching recently is CBS News. And I love their breakdown along with Entertainment Tonight. So let me just play you a quick breakdown.
Record executive Jimmy Iovine, Rihanna, actress Lauren London, and Uptown Records founder Andre Harrell were all mentioned today in court. Capricorn Clark, who testified and worked for Combs, said that she called Lauren London before she called Cassie to tell Cassie that Combs was in front of Kid Cudi's house and on his way inside. She said that she called Lauren London because they were sisters or like sisters at the time, and she wanted someone to know where she was. She said she called Lauren London and said, "I wanted to run, but I'm scared of mountain lions," saying that it was normal to see mountain lions in that area at the time. Months later, Clark said that she got a call from Harfier, the president of Bad Boy, for not submitting her vacation properly. Well, she said that summer of 2012, she was on vacation with Rihanna when she got that phone call. So Clark testified after being fired from Bad Boy, it was hard for her to get back into the music industry. This was around 2012. She said she got a call from Jimmy Iovine, who was the chairman of Interscope Records at the time, and that she thought she was going there to learn about possible job opportunities. But in fact, she testified that Jimmy Iovine told her to leave Puff alone or it would not end well for her.
Pause. We have to pause there because so many people are so critical of her, saying, "You did all of this for $55,000 a year." But we were talking about if she felt like she was trapped. He literally said that she would never be able to find work again outside. And again, some of you are saying, well, she could work here, she could work there. But your passion is to work in music and entertainment. Yes, you want to make a living, but you also want to do what you love. You don't want to be in a dead-end job doing what you don't love. But we don't even know, for all we know, that could have also been affected for her as well. Because I do know that there are some employers, they'll look at your resume like, you worked here, you worked at these amazing places. What? I'm not going to hire you to work in McDonald's because you're overqualified. There are people that won't hire you because you're overqualified. But she says that she was getting these intimidating things from powerful people in the industry. Jimmy Iovine?
Judge instructed the jurors at that point to disregard her last sentence. Around that same time, Clark says that she was seeking employment at CAA, which is a talent agency, and she claims that Combs and Uptown Records founder Andre Harrell showed up there. And
this goes back to what people have been saying, the Clive Davises of the all, the Andre Harrells. Andre Harrell is being named here. This is part of the reason why. Yesterday we covered a lot, but there are little elements that certain journalists, and again, everyone is taking notes that are in the court, and there are little cherry things, little morsels of things that people are picking up on and reporting on. That's why I'm bringing it to you. Sometimes it's the day of, sometimes it's the next day, because I am really looking at all of the different reporters and people that are inside that are covering this case.
They were trying to convince her not to take any legal action. Combs and Uptown Records founder Andre Harrell showed up there, and they were trying to convince her not to take any legal action. Capricorn Clark's testimony was one filled with a lot of emotion. Remember, she said that she met Combs back in 2002 and started working for him in 2004. She said that she saw herself as his protector at times. The defense asked her, "You ended up working for him again," referring to 2016, and she said yes. But she said that she was only working there because Cassie wanted her there. The defense said, "Did that hurt you, that you were only there because Cassie wanted you there?" At which point she said yes. "I have no parents," she said. "My son has autism. He's nonverbal. Quote, my stakes are higher." This is her speaking to why she keeps going back to Combs, asking for help, asking for a job, even.
There's also the cycle of abuse. We talked about this yesterday. Cycles of abuse are not just in relationships. There are cycles of abuse in the workplace, especially a workplace where it's so personal. You're dealing with the personal lives of these celebrities. And also, as she mentioned before, she has her kid that she wants to take care of. She doesn't have a community. So for her, she probably also felt like the work and the people that she worked so closely with had become family.
Though she gave testimony in which she described being pushed by him at one point and leaving, and also experiencing violence and even being kidnapped.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. So I wanted to update you guys on what I was hearing from Capricorn Clark's investigation and testimony. Be sure to check out yesterday's video where I break down all of some of the things that came out from Capricorn Clark's testimony. I felt like it was pretty interesting. I can't say that it either swayed the needle towards Diddy being guilty or not guilty. It just gave us another perspective, and I do believe that it was an important puzzle piece to what the prosecution is trying to build when it comes to the S trafficking and the more so on the racketeering charges. Because remember, yesterday we also talked about how he wanted to make sure that she didn't steal these pieces of jewelry that he had borrowed from Jacob the jeweler. And I said to you yesterday, I'm not sure if that's even true. I think he wanted an opportunity to have Capricorn Clark for 5 days, put her under a lie detector test, really test her limits, exude his power. I don't know if I necessarily believe that that jewelry really went missing. Because she talked about jewelry, the jewelry that she got to the airport and she noticed that jewelry was missing. He thought that she may have taken it. And for 5 days, she spent all day from like 10 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, where they're testing her, asking her questions, and even threatened her, saying that they would throw her into the East Side River if they found out that she was not trustworthy. So let's get into the day's events. Again, a shout out to our friends over at NBC News. They have really been a great resource for us, along with a lot of other people, including Inner City Press on Twitter, who's giving us, and this is why I said it's not a transcript, because there are a lot of little elements that we're picking up after I'm checking these other people that are in the court that are not included in some of his tweets, which is fine. He's giving us the basic gist of what's happening in court. So according to NBC News, they said that Los Angeles police officer Christopher Ignacio and LA fire arson investigator Lance Jimenez are expected to be the first witnesses to take the witness stand this morning. They will presumably discuss the 2012 Molotov cocktail attack on Kid Cudi's Porsche. Stylist Deontay Nash, a former Combs employee, and quote, Mia, an alleged victim of Combs, are set to follow the LA authorities. So that will be interesting because there's a lot of speculation on who some of these victims are. And I'm hoping that this whole arson portion of the RICO that they're trying to prove here isn't the only thing that the prosecution has. Because like I said before, the whole implementation of female DNA here makes me concerned if that's their only thing, because it does put a little bit of a doubt in a juror's mind that, well, maybe it wasn't him. They write this. It says, Combs' bitter rival, Death Row Records founder Suge Knight, said that he believes that the Bad Boy executive is being wrongfully prosecuted. Puffy and I are not friends, but Puffy should definitely walk at the end of the day, Knight told News Nation host Chris Cuomo in a jailhouse interview yesterday. Why do they allow people to do jailhouse interviews? Just asking. Knight said that if Combs did break the law, he shouldn't be the only person prosecuted. But the most important thing is that it was other executives that involved in Puffy's life. We just were talking about Jimmy Iovine. And for Puffy to be the only guy that gets on the stand is a sad day for hip hop, said Suge Knight, who is being held at the Richard Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego.
The opportunity, Suge, co-founder Death Row Records for everybody at home. Of course, you know who Suge Knight is. So
well,
you
no
keep coming up.
There's only one founder.
All right. The one and only, the OAO,
yeah.
The OAO, Suge Knight.
Yeah.
So tell us about Capricorn Clark and whether you believe she is a credible witness for the prosecution to make a racketeering case against Sean Diddy Combs.
Well, look, I say this all the time. Puffy and I are not friends, but Puffy should definitely walk. At the end of the day, how I know Capricorn and when I first heard about Capricorn, it was back when I was doing prison time. When I was doing prison time, it was a guy that didn't work for Death Row, but he worked for, he was over the security company. This guy, Capricorn, broke his windshield in the back of his truck. He wanted her to pay for it. She couldn't pay for it. A guy named Reggie Wright Jr. told her, well, you got to have sex for me, with me or you pay for it. So she couldn't pay for it, so he forced her to have sex with him, but they were still talking after that, right? But the most important thing is that it was other executives that was involved in Puffy's life. And for Puffy to be the only guy that gets on the stand is a sad day for hip-hop. Because once Capricorn had got beaten up allegedly, everybody said, well, she got her ass whooped. And when she was approached by an executive from Interscope, and you got to remember, Capricorn won the artist on Interscope. Puffy wasn't doing business with the guy in Interscope. If you guys want his name, I'll tell you. And when they talked to him, Interscope gave Capricorn $1 million, a check. But don't say nothing about the incident with her and Puffy. She got mad because she had to pay taxes on it. And she thought it was a settlement where she didn't have to pay taxes on it. So when Jimmy Iovine gave her that check, that's when all hell broke off. But at the same time, I don't think this is a case where Puffy should be going to prison. And
do you believe Capricorn, is Capricorn believable with this story with Diddy?
This is what I do know. I was in New York. And when I was in New York, it was me and a limo driver. That's it. I'm in different spots eating just by myself. I walked out. I see Capricorn, and I see another bitch. So those two hung out with me in New York, from restaurants to running around to doing whatever. So I don't know if the part that she was so scared of Puffy that they wouldn't talk to me, because I'm hanging out with them in New York, just us three. And I'm not here to badger nobody, but at the same time, when Reggie Wright Jr. basically made Capricorn, she said it over and over and over, I don't want to have sex with this fat f***er. I don't know if I can cuss on here. I just have sex with the fat man.
Too late.
But, okay, but they did. And she continued to be around, right? But when it's all said and done, how could every person who was involved with Puffy, it's not on the stand,
right,
except for Puffy?
I get it.
The law got to be blind.
I get it. Shug, and thank you very much for giving us...
Hey, for sure.
Go
one
ahead.
Last thing before
go
I go, you got to remember, Death Row and Employees and Bad Boy was really good friends. A lot of them. Reggie Wright Jr. And the other guy that be with Puffy, I forgot his name, the other fat dude, right? But they called Reggie Wright Jr. to do security for Puffy and Biggie the night Biggie got shot. So I can't see that they would look at Capricorn affiliation with Death Row that bad and that type of threats. I'll be surprised. Gene, that's his name. Gene and Reggie Wright Jr. is great friends. So that's got to be understanding there's something there. And we just can't jump to conclusions and say, throw Puffy in the bus. Like I said, him and I are not friends, but Puffy definitely should walk. Was right is right, wrong is wrong.
The Death Row founder's name was mentioned at trial because Combs allegedly armed himself and tried to confront Suge Knight at an LA restaurant in 2008. Knight was sentenced to 28 years in prison in 2018 for a fatal hit and run 3 years prior. A recap of yesterday, Capricorn Clark, who worked as an aide to Combs for years, testified in court yesterday and described her former boss as ruthless and violent, even accusing him of kidnapping her at one particular point. She testified that he threatened to unalive her, subjected her to days of lie detector tests, asked her to buy drugs, and shoved her at his Miami home in 2006. Clark also testified about Combs' toxic relationship with Cassie Ventura. She testified that Combs brutally beat Ventura after he broke into Kid Cudi's home in 2011. Clark told the court that she called Ventura's mother for help and told her, "He's beating the ish out of your daughter. I'm in over my head. Please help her. I can't call the police, but you can." There were quite a few things that came out from Capricorn Clark's testimony yesterday. Again, be sure to check that out from the video and podcast episode that we released. In her testimony yesterday, Capricorn Clark said that Combs was outraged to learn that Cassie and rapper Kid Cudi, whose real name is Scott Mascuti, were seeing each other. She recalled the morning of December 22nd, 2011, that Combs banged on her door, apartment door, enraged with a firearm and said, "Get dressed, we're going to unalive Mascuti." Clark also testified that she was sitting in a car at Kid Cudi's home when Combs entered the home. She also said that she took Ventura to Best Buy at one point to buy a burner phone to contact Kid Cudi because she feared Cassie was going to get us all unalived. I'm changing that word. Mark Agnifilo, Brian Steele, and Nicole Westermerlin were all seen arriving this morning in court. Combs is in court wearing a dark blue sweater over a white shirt. This is the 11th day, as I mentioned before, in regards to the Sean Diddy Combs case. So Los Angeles police officer Chris Ignacio, a 16-year veteran of the force, took the witness stand for the state. Ignacio was working out of the Hollywood division in late 2011 when he answered a call about a possible break-in at Kid Cudi's house. When Officer Ignacio entered Kid Cudi's home, he spotted a table with Christmas gifts on it. Some were wrapped, some were not. The policeman's observation could back up Kid Cudi's previous testimony that Combs broke into his house and opened gifts that he purchased for his family. The car police observed leaving the scene of the break-in at the Kid Cudi's home was registered to one of Combs's company. So that's important. According to testimony from the Los Angeles police officer, Chris Ignacio told the court that he noticed a Cadillac Escalade directly in front of the rapper's Hollywood home and memorized the license plate in case it was relevant. Okay, police officer. The officer added that they did not have a confirmed crime when reporting to the home. A trespassing report was made, Ignacio said.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The computer showed that the Escalade was registered to Bad Boy Productions Incorporated. So that confirms that Diddy, or someone associated with Diddy, was there the night of this alleged break-in. Defense attorney Brian Steele cross-examined the Los Angeles officer who responded to Kid Cudi's break-in, getting him to testify that the incident at the home was not reported as a burglary. They only reported it as, let me just get back to the actual term they used here, a trespassing report was made. Steele asked Ignacio whether there was evidence or reports of stolen items, and Ignacio said no. The officer also testified there were no reports made to him at the time that there was a threat to kill anyone. This is an important moment for Combs' defense because robbery and unaliving someone are predicate crimes that would provide support to the government's racketeering charge. This is why these are important details to pay attention to. Arson investigator Lance Jimenez recalled how he was dispatched to Kid Cudi's Los Angeles home and found a Molotov cocktail in the rapper's car. An engine company was already on the scene on January 9th, 2012, and found a Porsche with a foot-long cut on its canvas top, Jimenez said. He reported a bottle with a burned handkerchief in the center console with the smell of gasoline. The damage to Kid Cudi's car was not as extensive as it could have been because the Molotov cocktail didn't shatter as it was likely intended, Jimenez explained to the court, which is what I said last week when I saw the images. I thought that his car was like done for, but I think it's because whoever did it did not do it properly and it did not shatter the way it was supposed to. He testified the cloth fell out and that the bottle didn't break, which would have caused the gasoline inside the bottle to disperse. Jimenez told the court that the firebombs, in his experience, can cause significant damage. Jimenez called the fire set inside Kid Cudi's car a, quote, targeted crime. It was clear that an attacker took a bottle of gasoline, put a cloth in it, set it on fire, and dropped it into the rapper's Porsche. according to the Los Angeles Fire Department investigator. I personally felt that it was targeted, the witness said. He says, I personally felt that it was targeted. Arson is among the acts listed in the racketeering conspiracy allegations against Cohn. The trial came to a dramatic pause when Jimenez revealed that some of the fingerprints lifted during the trespassing probe were destroyed. The defense argued that all the testimony about lost fingerprints could be stricken from the record because the interference could be that Combs had something to do with it. What the government has done is outrageous, defense lawyer Mark Agnifilo said. U.S. District Judge Aaron Subramanian agreed with the defense and struck mentions of the lost fingerprints. This is why these things are important to note, because without that information, the jury can't consider it when determining your final verdict. Combs' legal team moved for a mistrial, accusing the prosecution of misconduct. What did I say yesterday? I said, I feel as if this is their legal ploy. They have been trying, allegedly, I'll say. Even though the prosecution has accused them, more recently, when with the Cassie testimony, trying to drag out the Cassie testimony to over a weekend, almost triggering a mistrial. Then they mentioned a mistrial the other day. Here we are again. Combs' legal team moved for a mistrial, accusing the prosecution of misconduct over the implication that Combs may have destroyed fingerprint evidence. They also were accusing the prosecution yesterday of going to ask a question that wasn't asked. And the judge would say, he never asked the question to Kid Cudi. So this seems to be their legal defense. Judge Aaron Subramanian ruled that the testimony from the arson investigator would be struck. But Alexandra Shapiro, one of Combs' attorneys, said the jury will be left with the impression regardless.
Which is true.
Prosecutor Christy Slavik argued that there were good faith questions regarding the investigation into the fire bombing of Kid Cudi's car. Subramanian denied the motion for a mistrial, saying there were no objections on the line of questioning up until that point and no testimony that was prejudicial in any way, shape, or form. He added that it was plausible to raise the fingerprint cards during their direct questioning of the witness because the defense was likely going to bring up the fact that the evidence in the investigation was destroyed. This is where bringing an attorney to understand why are they taking this. I mean, obviously, setting up a mistrial is a benefit to Sean Diddy Combs. So Jimenez testified that he wanted to interview possible witnesses who were connected to Combs, but was greeted by silence. He especially wanted to interview Combs' girlfriend at the time, Cassie Ventura, and assistant Capricorn Clark, but they never returned his phone calls or answered the front door when the investigator knocked in person, Jimenez said. Here's the thing, though. Couldn't they make them testify, or not testify, but make them do an interview, especially if they feel as if they may be connected or know something? Jimenez's testimony could go to the government's obstruction of justice allegations against Combs. Okay, I didn't think about that part. A single black driving glove was found in the backseat of Kid Cudi's car, Jimenez told the court upon cross-examination. Jimenez testified that the glove belonged to Kid Cudi and that it was not sent out for testing as a part of the investigation, which goes to discredit the witness, saying, why didn't you investigate the glove? Defense attorney Mark Agnifilo asked if the person who dropped the Molotov cocktail in the porch was potentially wearing a glove, which Jimenez said was possible. I gotta give it to Diddy's attorneys. They're doing a decent job. Jimenez's failed effort to interview Clark even led to a verbal confrontation with the assistant's brother, the witness said. The Los Angeles Fire Department investigation earlier testified that he couldn't reach Clark and Ventura. But Jimenez went a step further at the end of his testimony, saying Clark's brother forcefully told him over the phone that she didn't want to be interviewed. And I'm wondering, because I didn't see the transcript, forcefully, how do you say forcefully? Like, how do you determine it's forcefully? Because some people, especially if you're from New York, some people might say way some New Yorkers speak can be aggressive and forceful, even though they're just saying, how you doing? And we saw that yesterday. I'm not sure if it was in the initial one that I did that was muted, but there were a few moments yesterday where speculating on how someone feels is usually an attorney's moment to say objection. That's hard to determine. But Jimenez went a step further at the end of his testimony, saying that Clark's brother forcefully told him over the phone that she didn't want to be interviewed. Jimenez said that Clark's brother made it abundantly clear that she, quote, wanted nothing to do with his probe. But wouldn't that make her a suspect? But okay. Deontay Nash, a stylist who worked with both Combs and Kathy Ventura, was called to the witness stand. Cassie testified earlier in the trial that Nash was a friend and that he was present when Combs allegedly attacked her, causing her to cut her eyebrow when she hit the corner of her bed. She told the court that Nash jumped on Combs' back in her defense because Combs was trying to attack her. Combs allegedly threatened not to release Cassie Ventura's music when he was upset with her, Nash told the court. The celebrity stylist testified that he spent time with the couple and that quite a few times, Combs would tell Ventura he wouldn't release her music anytime that she said something Combs didn't like. So you remember yesterday when Capricorn Clark was talking about her career, Capricorn kind of conflicted that. And again, this is the prosecution's witness saying, well, she's got the, quote, lion's share of the resources that were being spent on her career at that particular point. So that is going to make the jury kind of go like, so what's the truth here? They said that would tell Ventura he wouldn't release her music anytime she said something Combs didn't like. The singer was under contract with Combs' record label in a 10-album deal, but only released one full studio album back in 2006. Nash also testified that he heard Combs threaten Ventura's parents sometime around 2012 or 2013 while he was sitting next to her in a car. The judge adjourned for lunch. Okay, so they said the government's lead prosecutor, Maureen Comey, yesterday asked the court to extend the regular lunch break from 30 minutes. The judge granted 45 minutes today, perhaps signaling she made progress. So remember, they were saying that they felt like they were ahead of schedule when and representing their case when it comes against Diddy. So that's why they're able to take a little bit of a longer lunch break. Just before the break, Nash recounted an incident that allegedly showed how demanding and controlling Combs could be with Ventura. They all attended Vanity Fair's famed Oscars party in 2014, and Ventura wore her hair stylishly down, which Nash thought looked great. But Combs disagreed, picked up Nash by his jacket, and demanded Cassie's hair be put up. The witness testified. Nash said that he quickly got some hairpins and put Ventura's hair up before Combs remarked, I was right, it does look better up. Combs was not shy about threatening Ventura's career if she didn't behave exactly as the music mogul wanted, Nash testified. The witness called Combs telling Ventura that if he heard from her smart-ass mouth, then her little mixtape won't come out. Because that was a period, if you've been following our recaps of the day-to-day, I've been telling you, I've been watching some of the old interviews with Cassie Ventura. Literally just watched an interview that Ashley, remember Ashley from Love and Marriage DC, if you watch that show? She had did an interview where Cassie was promoting this new mixtape. Because, again, she was, you could tell like she wanted to release music. And Ashley had asked her at one particular point, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? And she's like, hopefully put my album out. So there are multiple interviews. Now when you go back and you look at it, where she looks defeated when it comes to her music. And as if her music wasn't, like she wasn't hopeful that her music was actually going to come out. They say that Nash was in Cassie Ventura's apartment helping her prepare for a musical festival when Combs allegedly arrived and assaulted the singer, Nash testified. Ventura previously mentioned the attack in her testimony 2 weeks ago. Nash told the courts that Combs was enraged as he grabbed Ventura by the hair and began to kick and hit her. Nash said that he and Mia, also known as Victim 4, each tried to jump on Combs' back but were thrown off. Combs continued to hit Cassie until her head hit the edge of her bed frame and began bleeding, Nash testified. Prosecutors showed photos of Cassie's bloodied eyebrow when she testified regarding this incident. The other element of this, and again, this would be a great question for an attorney, is that although Cassie had a personal relationship with Diddy, she also still was his employee. And again, there are elements, of course, the ass trafficking that they're talking about, but also the racketeering that they have to build a stronger case in regards to how he utilized coercion, arson, and his resources to create this enterprise to satisfy his sexual desires. I get it. A lot of us are not attorneys that are following this case, but are feeling like we're earning a law degree. But this is where law gets really interesting, because it's not as black and white as it seems when it comes to public opinion. This is only week 3 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. We have more to talk about. But before we get into that, as always, guys, don't forget to like the video. Don't forget to subscribe. Shout out to our live premiere crew. I see you guys in the chat. Be sure to like the video and be sure to share your thoughts on this. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel, be sure to subscribe. And don't forget, you can hear a lot more on this trial and other things on the Kempire podcast while you're there. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And don't forget, I'm taking the Kempire After Dark show on the road yet again this summer. We're first coming to Philadelphia. I'll be there on July 10th at City Winery. Then we're going to Atlanta's City Winery on August 5th. Then we're back at Union Stage on August 22nd in Washington, D.C. And then back here at the Green Room 42 in New York City for September 12th. That particular show has a live stream option. And for those that are attending the other shows, get the live stream option for New York too, because what I say in Philadelphia or Atlanta or DC won't be what I say in September in New York City. Get your tickets today, guys, for the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, right now in the description. So let's get back into the stylist's testimony. So according to our friends over at NBC News, they write this in the update of a summary of what's going on in court. They said Combs once threatened to release S tapes of Cassie Ventura to her parents' workplace and the internet, the stylist said in his testimony. Nash told the court that he was at Ventura's apartment when Combs came over and grabbed Ventura by the hair, ordering Nash to get out. He testified that Ventura eventually got in his car and they left, but that Combs called, ordering them to pull over. Combs then came to the window angry with Ventura over something and told her that he would release S tapes of her to the internet. According to Nash, the music mogul said that he would first release them to her parents' workplaces to get them fired, Nash told the court. Why would that get them fired? But I guess when you're in the middle of a situation like this, it makes you think that, anything's possible. Ventura cried as they drove away, Nash said, and the stylist tried to reassure her by telling her that Combs was on the tapes as well. Nash said that when Ventura told him that Combs wouldn't be on the tapes because he was filming her with other men. So that was something that he didn't know at the time. Nash didn't report the violence he witnessed against Cassie Ventura to the police because he feared retaliation from Combs. Especially in Nash's position as a stylist, all it takes is a call from Sean Diddy Combs to the industry and the agencies that represent these stylists and his career is over. That is still a real thing, unfortunately. But Nash testified that he did speak to Combs' chief of staff, Christina Corum, about the issue. Corum promised to speak to Combs, Nash said, but the violence did not stop. I just find it interesting that, again, for those that are just getting this first update from our channel, what we've discovered is that the prosecution is unsealing the witnesses slowly but surely. Like, it's not completely revealed to everyone yet in regards to who they're going to bring to the witness stand. And that might be to protect the witnesses from retaliation. Cassie Ventura expressed that she didn't want to go to hotels with Combs to participate in freak-offs, but would go because Combs wanted her to, Nash testified. He told the court that Ventura would pack sex toys and be gone for a day or more, returning tired. One example Nash gave to Ventura's not wanting to go to freak-offs was after a birthday celebration that Combs insisted on throwing for her. Ventura didn't want to leave, but said that Combs was mad at her for not going to a hotel for a freak-off, Nash said. Ventura previously testified that she eventually left her party with Combs and gave in to his demand instead of going to a karaoke club with her friends. Nash told the jury that he had kept in contact with Combs and doesn't have any ill will against him despite all that he witnessed. He called the regular text message exchange with the defendant loving. Nash said in direct examination, "I don't hate him. It's just not me." Then under cross-examination, Nash was asked if he was planning a lawsuit against Combs, and the witness replied, no, I'm focused on getting out of here, court. So that's interesting. Again, this is painting the man that they're trying to paint, the prosecution is trying to paint as this terrible human being, threatening, has created this world of violence and power and using it for his ill-gotten gain. This is pointing out, like, well, despite Nash seeing this one of his good friends and client being abused by this man, you still remained in communication with him and referred to the communication as, quote, loving. It's important for us to note in regards to us covering this case. So we do have an update. We have to say, for those that, I think it was yesterday that I said that I wasn't sure where we were when it comes to Cassie Ventura giving birth. Well, according to the news right now, they're saying that Cassie Ventura has given birth. We know that she was pregnant with a boy. She was also on the stand at 8.5 weeks pregnant. Part of the reason why the prosecution did not want to drag out her testimony, which it felt like the defense were trying to drag it out in order to allegedly to trigger a mistrial. So according to NBC News, this is their update in regards to Cassie Ventura giving birth. They said Cassie Ventura gave birth on Tuesday, roughly 2 weeks after she took the stand as a witness in Sean Combs' federal S-trafficking trial. A source familiar with the matter confirmed to NBC News. The baby is her third birth husband, Alex Fine. Ventura announced the pregnancy in an Instagram post featuring black and white photos of her family, including the couple's two young daughters. The singer and model just spent nearly a week testifying in Combs' trial, recounting instances of rape and abuse she alleges she experienced at his hands. Her civil lawsuit against the entertainment mogul in 2023 set off a firestorm of abusive allegations and lawsuits from others who alleged that they had similar experiences, leading to federal investigation and charges against Combs that included S trafficking. During the case, it was revealed Ventura and Combs settled their lawsuit after it was filed for $20 million, she revealed in court. He denied at the time any wrongdoing. We also found out in her testimony that she is also expecting an 8-figure settlement from Intercontinental Hotel, where the 2016 incident where we saw Diddy harming Cassie in their hallways. Ventura was more than 8 months pregnant when she took the stand on May 13th. On her third day on the stand, lead prosecutor Maureen Comey called for a speedy cross-examination, predicting Ventura could have her baby over the weekend. U.S. District Judge Aaron Subramanian agreed with the prosecutor that Ventura's presence in court should not be needed past May 16th. So the judge agreed with that, but it did feel, based off the questioning and based off people that were in the court, when the defense was cross-examining Cassie, they were a little bored. That this is according to journalists that were witnessing this cross-examination in the court. And the judge looked like he felt as well, where are we going with this questioning? Let's get this questioning going. Because they felt like their questioning wasn't really, it felt like they were dragging it out. And it seemed as if the judge agreed. So Mark Agnifilo, Diddy's attorney, said that he might want Ventura to come back the following week if needed. In what universe did you not understand? This is what was going to happen, the judge said at the time. You're not telling me that this wasn't everyone's understanding that this witness was going to be done this week. The judge is very efficient. And I will say, I feel like the judge is fair. Okay. All right. So that is the update in regards to Cassie Ventura giving birth. We knew that it was imminent. We heard that she had went to the hospital yesterday. Well, apparently, congratulations, Cassie. I know Cassie's life has made a complete 180 in comparison to what she documented in her lawsuit and what she testified in this federal case against Sean Diddy Combs. Hopefully, the fact that she was able to get this testimony done before giving birth, it does feel like, based off the statement that Alex Fine, her husband, released, that they're ready to move on with their lives. All right, let's get on with the rest of this testimony. So let's continue with Deontay Nash's testimony. So earlier in the day, Nash recalled a tense moment in either 2013 or 2014 when Ventura was fleeing from Combs following a bad argument. The witness recalled Ventura going up to her hotel room balcony in hopes of evading an enraged Combs, who had sent Nash to find her. The stylist said that he feared that she was about to harm herself. In a quote, he said she was going to go over the balcony. Nash may have revealed some news to the courtroom during his cross-examination, telling the jury he last spoke to Cassie Ventura after she gave birth yesterday. Not him dropping tea. Okay. The stylist was asked about when he spoke to Ventura, who was described as Nash's good friend, by defense attorney Xavier Donaldson. Nash responded that it was after she had her baby. Nash was instructed not to speak to Ventura about any testimony as they both were taking the witness stand. He told the court that their conversations were generally about how she was doing and about what clothing to wear when appearing in court. Oh, okay. The government will have to make a new travel arrangements for Nash, who was set to fly out of New York City tonight, but will have to return to the witness stand tomorrow morning. He ended for the day being asked about times where it seemed Combs' security team assisted Nash and Ventura, even when it conflicted with Combs. Mia, a pseudonym for Victim 4, is expected to take the stand tomorrow and continue until court ends Friday afternoon. It's interesting to see. I don't know if we have we even gotten to Victim 2 or Victim 3, because there's rumors that some of these victims that initially agreed to testify might be missing. So the fact that we're going to Victim 4, I'm interested to see what's happening there. But again, nothing has to necessarily go in order. We'll just have to go in the order that the prosecution wants to handle this case. Again, based off of us being midway in the third week of this trial, not midway in this court proceeding, but midway this week, I don't know yet if the prosecution has proven their case, but they still have multiple weeks to continue to hammer home these sex trafficking and racketeering charges. Based on what I'm hearing so far as a layman, I'm not completely convinced that they've done their job. I'm definitely convinced that Sean Diddy Combs is a bad man and that he did a lot of bad things to a lot of bad people and that maybe he should be in jail for a lot of different reasons. Just not sure if the prosecution is necessarily driving that home just yet. I'm not saying that they haven't added a lot of different puzzle pieces to warrant it, but has the defense done their job in regards to responding to those alleged puzzle pieces? Again, I still think it's too early. And at the end of the day, this is going to be in the hands of the jury and the stipulations that they have to follow when making their decision. As I said before, we will be bringing some legal minds and some other experts here on the channel to help us understand some of the things that we've been unpacking and talking about over the last couple of weeks. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the channel and turn on your notification so you never miss out on breaking news when we go live or when we upload. And don't forget, we are also uploading our special episodes on the Diddy trial on the Kempire podcast. We also add additional content to some of those episodes as I'm getting more information as the day goes on. So be sure to subscribe there. And don't forget the Kempire After Dark, the Villain Era Tour, is coming to Philadelphia on July 10th, then on August 5th in Atlanta, then August 22nd in Washington, D.C., back here in New York on September 12th. All ticket information will be available in the description. Go get your tickets today. As always, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for watching. And of course, thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. Don't forget to give the Kempire 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And as always, for more information on everything Kempire Radio Network, head on over to KempireRadio.com.